Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, you're not going to hear that same old lazy journalism, not on this show.
This guy could be great, but on the other hand, it wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't.
No, I said not on this show.
But the overwhelming majority is just regurgitated crap.
Guys, did you not hear me? That stuff is not happening on this show.
Tackling was a huge issue last week. I hope the coaches got so far, got on the guys so that they can wear. We're going to restart that. I did not realize just how much profanity was in that sentence.
You're really not helping the situation here, James. What else do you got?
Why don't we do, you know, box tops for NFL billionaires?
Now that's a good idea. Here we go. Week 3 of the NFL preseason starts now.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the most important edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am your host, Pod Vader. Most important because this is the most important week of the preseason, week 3 of the 2016 NFL preseason. And I have 3 super fans here joining me, 2 of our regulars. Although, James, I'm going to introduce you first, our Texan super fan. I believe with this appearance, you now become an unofficial regular to the show.
Well, I'm glad on this penultimate preseason week that I've gained that status. Do I get like a little badge to put on my Facebook account?
Sure. You can make it up for yourself as well. Feel free. And then share with the rest of us so we can put it on our Facebook. Greg is our Steelers super fan who did not join us as a regular last week.
Nope. Kicked off the end of summer going to Cedar Point. Everyone knows where that is. I'm sure Neil does.
I can guarantee Neil doesn't, but I'm sure he would be too knackered to go to such a place. Neil is our Scottish super fan who represents the Washington Redskins. Hello, Neil.
Hey, guys. It's great to be here tonight. James, you'll have to watch out. By joining the Thursday regulars, you actually get a tattoo. Although when Jay did it to me, it felt like I was being branded.
And nobody said what that's a tattoo of either. So
that would ruin the surprise. Anybody could just parade around as a Thursday regular then.
That's true. That's true. Hey, we want to hear from you folks, the Next Fan Up fans. Send us emails to nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can find all of our written previews, the super fans, most of the super fans, although this week it's been a rough hoe of it. We'll have all the written previews on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast, or just search Next Fan Up on the search bar on Facebook, and our show will pop right up. And of course, you can download and subscribe to our show on iTunes. If you missed our brand new edition to our podcast, we now have a Wednesday show featuring interviews with different guests. This past week, we kicked it off with pro wrestler Eric Young, who went and graded the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Expert League. So if you want some fantasy football advice and want to hear what he has to say about the Blog Talk Radio Expert League, go check that out. You can download and subscribe to our show on iTunes or anywhere great podcasts are heard. All right, that's the business end of things.
More importantly, Jay, I believe Eric Young happens to be a fisherman. Is that not correct? Didn't you do some TV series about fishing?
He did. He did. Yeah. It was some sort of crazy, you know, dangerous fishing, too. So,
Fishing is dangerous and crazy.
Right. Exactly right.
We need to get him on more. I like him.
I have a feeling Eric's going to be rather busy in the very near future. I don't know how I would know that, but I'll just leave it at that before I get anybody in trouble. So let's talk about NFL, pro football, week 3 of the preseason. This is the week where most of the starters for most of the teams are going to get the most of the work. And we're going to kick things off with the Atlanta Falcons versus the Miami Dolphins. The game will be seen nationally this evening on NBC. James, you have this preview.
Yes, as both of the superfans pointed out, for those that do not know, like I didn't know up until about 20 minutes ago, it's actually being played in Mickey Mouse Land, Orlando. The Dolphins stadium renovations are not quite complete, so no chance that goes poorly for the start of their regular season. It's just kind of like their, you know, team building, right? Looks good. It's supposed to be great. And when the regular season rolls around, it may or may not be all put together. But that's neither here nor there. For the Falcons, Tim is somewhat happy about being able to play against the Miami Dolphins. Last year, the Dolphins' defensive line manhandled their terrible line in the preseason. He's hoping to see what the addition of Alex Mack this offseason will mean for this. He's starting to see some separation by players on offense. Brandon Wilds, in particular, will likely secure the third running back position. And Devin Fuller looks like a lock for one of their wide receiving spots. As far as defense goes, that's where the Falcons' mess is. Will the Falcons and Dan Quinn stick with veterans with the linebacking core or give the youth a nod? So basically, let the youth try and gain some experience and play up to a higher level, or hope that the older veterans just don't lose a step. They don't know who the third string cornerback is going to be, and that is problematic because Jalen Collins is going to be suspended for the first four games. So for the Atlanta defensive line, he is unsure if anybody will be able to get to the quarterback, and is hoping that a defensive tackle will volunteer his tribute to soak up some blockers and actually do something. Finally, Derek Shelby continues to look like a heap of poor play. So he is probably the most pessimistic superfan with a team in with a 2-0 preseason start. As for Miami Dolphins, it's the pivotal preseason game three. Miami starters need to play every minute of it, both offensively and defensively. Tannehill made some nice plays last week, but most of that came against the second string of Dallas. So hopefully there's a step forward there, just like what's been said about him just about every week of his career. Hopefully the defense will get on the plane this time, because Ron points out they failed to show up entirely last week. He's not entirely sure if Kiko Alonso has any ability to tackle, and if Cameron Wake makes his first appearance, what kind of impact will he have? Other than that, it's just a classic third preseason game.
Well, classic, except for the fact that Ron was so huge about the Miami Dolphins last year in week three. By the way, I'm going to pull the curtain back here and out Greg, who's trying to get us to say bad things about Ron in our chat. Greg, why don't you just say the bad things about Ron?
Well, I mean, what we do have here is history and memory. We just got to make sure that we all stay calm. It's week three. Last year, Ron went about supernova, saying the Dolphins were going to win the division, the Patriots are going to be like, you know, it's 6-10 or something. So no matter how good your team looks in week three, you got to stay even keel. That's pretty much what I wanted to call Ron out for. I'm sure he is this year. He took a lot on the chin last year, but it's just kind of funny to reminisce.
He did kind of go a little overboard about his Dolphins love last year, right around this time. So, it is fun to give Ron the business. Did I just say that? Did that come out right? I don't think it did. Let's move on.
Anytime you're on the same side as Miko Grimes, I guess you're on the winning side.
Let's move on now to the Dallas Cowboys at Seattle Seahawks. This one is yours, Greg.
Well, we got great write-ups on our Facebook page from both our Dallas and Seattle superfans. Our Dallas fan, Brian, is going to be watching for his brand-new running back, Zeke Elliott, to actually get into the action this week for the first time. He's also going to be watching the play of the other wide receivers that are going to get the play this week, in Bryce Butler and Lucky Whitehead. They get a chance to play when Dez is not going to be playing this week. So that will be interesting for the Cowboys fans. The Seattle fans are, again, excited to see their rookie running back get on the field. CJ Procise might get to actually play this week for the first time. And Justin, our Seattle super fans, also going to be having his vision locked on the other cornerback, not Richard Sherman, to see who's going to step up there. Apparently, they've had a really good play this year so far in the preseason from Sheard. He's looking really good, but he is being challenged by Simon still. So that's a battle that will be decided probably this week.
All right. Well, you know, by the way, is anyone betting on these games? I know we talked about this last week. If you are betting on these games, please, please get yourself some help. I mean,
you know, prop bets. Prop bets are the way to go in the preseason.
Oh, tell us more.
I prefer not to out myself as a degenerate gambler, but no, it's fine. You get a group of people together. You just start saying, you know, I bet that they're going to get 3 first downs this drive. Go online, find out. You can get some crazy odds on like who's going to win or who's going to have the most rushing yards in a particular game, most receiving yards in a particular game. You might get 5-1 or 10-1. I realize I'm not helping my case about being a degenerate gambler right now.
No. No, you're not. But in any case, let's move on now to the Friday matchups. We have the New England Patriots at the Carolina Panthers. Ho! Oh, I know a guy who knows a lot about the New England Patriots. I guess this one's my game. You know, the things I'm going to be watching, are we going to see Tom Brady on the field? My hope is no. My thought is we probably will. And then if he is on the field, my hope is that it's sort of a preseason game for him. He gets to drive the field. He gets to drive the team down the field, score a touchdown, and then he's off. And then I want to see Jimmy Garoppolo for the rest of the game. I actually would prefer not to see any of Jacoby Brissett in this game at all. I just want to see Garoppolo for the rest of the game and see how he actually can perform against a defense that's pretty good in Carolina. The other thing I want to see is the defense. They seem to be starting off slow. That's sort of the perception of what's going on in these games, in these preseason games so far. They're giving up a lot of yards. They're giving up some touchdowns, but they're also making plays. So there's a lot of inconsistency in the Patriots defense that I've seen in the preseason. I don't know if that's due to injuries or due to sort of the shuffling in and out of players as they're still working on the best schemes and the best combination of players to start a game. So those would be some of the things I'll be looking for. A player that I don't suspect I'm going to see on the field for the Patriots yet, although it has been reported literally during the recording of this podcast that the Patriots have traded for Barkevious Mingo, the former first round pick of the Cleveland Browns. Interesting. He'll be reunited with Jabal Sheard. that I think is, and I haven't seen anything from Mike Reese yet. I'll try and dig some of that up while I let you guys talk about this. But I'm pretty sure Mingo is a guy that the Patriots had interest in back in the day. He certainly fits the bill of a player that the Patriots would be interested in on defense. I think he's got a chance to make a pretty big impact for New England. I think I saw Monty in our Slack group post hashtag Moneyball, as we all know that the Browns made a big move to sort of do this Moneyball type management of their roster. This does not seem like Moneyball to me. Greg, I know you have a few comments on this.
Well, I think it's interesting because from his height and the position he played in college, he played defensive end for LSU in college, but he's very light. Like he's like around like 220 pounds, but he's 6'5". And they actually had success with him earlier in his career, like off the line of scrimmage a little bit. And there were some talk from the crazy talking heads here in Cleveland that they might move him to like an inside linebacker or like a safety even, because he is speedy. He is rangy, but he cannot take on the big offensive lineman and get a pass rush. He does have a good first step. So I'm just interested just with what Belichick could do with him because Belichick thinks outside the box with that, what is it, Jamie Collins, that is a, you know, enormous linebacker that plays it, you know, that he uses in coverage a lot and stuff like that. So this might even make the Patriots more dynamic and actually tap this top 10 potential, because I think you were right. Everyone had Mingo high on their board a few years ago when he came out, but they tried to force him into being a 3-4 outside linebacker, if that's just not what he is.
It seems that we do not have a Panthers write-up yet from Jimmy Six, which is a shame. I'd really like to talk to you about what, from the Panthers' perspective, what they should be watching for. I know I'll be watching to see how the Patriots' offense performs against that defense. You know, there's been a lot of turnover, especially in that secondary for Carolina. So that's something that I'll have my eye on. I don't really know. I guess the wide receivers. I mean, what are the big stories in Carolina? James, do you have any thoughts here?
They're going to, Devin Funchess right now is kind of a threat to Kelvin Benjamin. They're just trying to work out the depth on their wide receiver core, it would seem. They had a little bit of turnover, cornerbacks, obviously, with losing Josh Norman. For them, it just kind of seems more like business as usual, which is a good thing for a well-run organization, that they don't have a lot of turnover, a lot of big storylines. With the Mingo news, it's a little interesting because Moneyball, everybody just, with the baseball side, it was all about on-base percentage and finding value. Basically trading away stars at the height of their value if you couldn't win now. So I kind of assumed that the Browns would be taking like a West Coast offense approach of, well, you know, every single down, we don't have to hit a home run, but mixing metaphors with a baseball team, that's fun. We don't have to hit a home run, but just always get, you know, 3 or 4 yards, constantly move the ball down the field. But with what they did this offseason, specifically in the draft, just loading up on wide receivers, going out and getting RG3, who, you know, has a big arm and can make some big plays. I'm kind of curious if their, you know, quote unquote Moneyball approach to the NFL is more like what the Rams did with The Greatest Show on Turf of, you know, we're just going to try and put up 50 points a game and, you know, challenge a defense to stop us. And then, you know, our defense doesn't have to make a stop every single time. With the rules kind of favoring the offense, specifically deep passes, as Torrey Smith and Joe Flacco, you know, made huge contracts off of that whole pattern of just chuck the ball deep and get a PI. I'm starting to get a little curious or a little bit more interested in what the Browns are actually going to be doing, you know, 2 years from now.
Neil, we'll use this as an opportunity to transition into your game, but another player the Patriots traded away was their center, Brian Stork, and they sent him to you for a conditional 7th-round pick for the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, really interesting one. Really interesting one in the sense that you are going to cut him, I believe, and Scott McLuhan phoned up your guy there in New England and said, we'd rather not want him to go through the waiver process, so why don't we just do a deal for this guy? So obviously McLuhan likes him. Conditional seventh round pick, that's fine. I think you had noted on Slack, Jay, that his one of the big issues with him has been concussions. I think he's had a large number of concussions over the last few years. Otherwise, a decent player. He would certainly be if he comes to us and does all right, he'll be a big upgrade on what we have at center. Corey Lichtensteiger has been manning the center spot for a while, and I have to say, Jay, he's not very exciting. He's certainly not as exciting as a run on the Val Raven roller coaster at Cedar Point. But I think he will get the starting job eventually, maybe 3 or 4 games in the season. And he'll be a size, you know, height and weight upgrade over Lichtensteiger. And to be honest, Lichtensteiger's been quite poor for a couple of seasons. So that would be, well, if he sticks, he'll be a big upgrade, and we'll sort of solidify our line. And we'll also let Spencer Long go back to being the backup center and the backup left guard. And I think that would be, yeah, good all round for Washington there. Shame, because it'll probably knock Austin Reiter off the roster. And I had a kind of bit of a soft spot for Austin, so and hopefully he gets picked up somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Stork. He had lost his starting position to David Andrews. Andrews is surpassed him on the depth chart, so he wasn't going to start. And as I did mention, he's sort of a walking concussion, which is never good for an offensive lineman, especially as they are the ones that are banging heads most often on the football field. So when he can perform, he's fantastic. I'd be concerned that he's not the most reliable of players, and health would be my biggest concern for him. Moving forward.
My other concern with the trade, Jay, is that I think, am I right in saying you lost Vollmer for a period of time? Possibly the whole season?
Pretty, right now the concern is that Vollmer will be out for the whole season, yes.
So where's the, do you have the veteran leadership there on the team? He was probably one of the longer standing players, and it is going to mean that Marcus Cannon, everybody's favourite offensive lineman in New England, is likely going to start. Would that be right?
He is probably right now penciled in as your starting right tackle. Nate Solder should be back and will be on the left. I believe in terms of the linemen that we have, Solder would have the most experience out of all those players. Tooney is a guy who has definitely come on and has been playing left guard. So he's a player to watch, but he is definitely a rookie. And of course the right guard spot, I don't know if that has been solidified yet as to who the starter will be. But again, we're not talking about anybody that's had a lot of experience. We're talking about a couple of the guys from last year and Josh Klein, although I think Klein might be in his third or fourth year, Shaq Mason, and those type of guys at the right guard position. So, yes, I trust me, the offensive line was a huge problem for the Patriots last year. I don't think that they've necessarily done enough to fix those problems this year. So it's going to be a work in progress. It's definitely an area of concern.
Going to the Mingo trade, just very briefly, just wanted to say, and I think Greg absolutely nailed it there with his reasons for why it failed for Mingo in Cleveland in terms of his where they played him. Is Mingo going to be the replacement for Chandler Jones's sacks? Is that the idea? Do you think it's just a situational pass rusher?
Well, I think the idea was that it was going to be Jabal Sheard. I know Sheard's been banged up ever since the New Orleans game. So there might be, this might lead to us, you know, pondering if there's a little bit more to Sheard's injury than we necessarily know about at the current time. As we know, we probably will never know anything about the Patriots injuries. And now that probable has been removed from the official practice reports, I'll be really curious to see the Patriot injuries moving forward. Because I can guarantee you we'll probably see 50% of the roster listed as questionable week in and week out. But it's enough Patriots talk, guys. I always try to stop the Patriots talking. You guys make me go one step further every single time. It's fantastic. But Neil, take some time and talk about your team against the Buffalo Bills.
Sure. Again, like last week, Jay, to be honest, it's quite a quick preview from Washington because most things are sorted. The roster is pretty much done. There's even, if you Google various roster and depth charts for Washington, everybody's kind of saying, you know, well, okay, apart from the odd, you know, will we keep 10 linemen or 9 linemen? Everything else is pretty much done. There's a couple of battles going on. Clearly, we lost Matt Jones for a few weeks. He certainly won't play again in the preseason. And the other running backs, Chris Thompson won't play either. I think they'll try and wrap him in bubble wrap and keep him for the season. So it's a chance for youngsters Rob Kelly and Keith Marshall to really get a shot at solidifying third place in the depth chart. And I have a feeling if, as they've done so far, not really done a huge amount, may well be that Washington will be looking for a veteran running back come the cuts when rosters are trimmed down. So this is their big chance. And I think it'll be more about not just being able to do something in the running game, but also if they can perform all tasks of running back, including doing a bit of pass protection. So we'll see how that goes. In terms of the offensive line, we've just talked about the trade for Stork. He obviously won't play tomorrow night, but he will be joining up with the squad, I think, at the weekend. And he may want to see how he is concussion injury-wise, see if he's ready to play in the final preseason game just to get some plays for us. So that means Lichtensteiger will start again, and he'll have Spencer Long and Sean Laval at left guard battling out for what's really the final starting spot in the team. As a Washington fan, I'll be really happy to see Trent Williams, our left tackle, back out there. This will be his first performance, first plays in preseason. He's our best player on the team, without any shadow of a doubt. He's our best player, and it's always good to have your best players out there. They're saying Cousins will play half a game, maybe a little bit more than half a game, but I would be surprised if he shows up again after halftime. Just be a chance to see him get into some sort of rhythm. It's all about rhythm now, isn't it? Looking to see if your offense has got a bit of rhythm and is able to drive up and down the field. And on defensively, we've had a very, really good preseason in terms of our starting defense when they've played. He was having the now, of course, that's you can't read a great deal into that, but it's better than the other way around, where your defense is just a turnstile and getting absolutely run over and passed over. So the defensive question, I guess, is pass rush. We're quite short of pass rushers after losing Gallet early on in preseason. So chance to see Kerrigan and Preston Smith lining up opposite each other and see if they can do something. We could really do with some interior pass rush, but I think that's going to be a real struggle for us this year. So let's get through the game injury free and forget preseason 4, and it's on to Monday night against the Pittsburgh Peace Pipers. Then for the Buffalo Bills, Robert's been terrific, put a fantastic preview up on Slack, and I'll only mention a few of the points. But I think all these points are worth reading on our Facebook page. The running back is also still a lot of running back questions this year. I think there's quite a few teams with running back issues. And Buffalo, another one. They've got McCoy as a starter. Local journalists are saying that Bush will be the backup, Reggie Bush. But then, who's going to be the third guy? They cut Carlos Williams this past week. I think somebody who Greg quite rightly predicted he wouldn't get picked up on waivers, and Greg again was spot on, he didn't. A guy probably with attitude issues, and isn't he the guy who wasn't he claiming to be overweight because his wife was eating lots of stuff when she was pregnant and he felt he had to eat alongside her? And I think that tells you all you need to know, doesn't it, about Carlos Williams. I'm hoping that Jonathan Williams, who is a rookie from Arkansas, he was one of the players I really liked in the draft process, and disappointed Washington didn't pick him up. He's there with Buffalo, and hopefully he'll get a chance to have a go at the third running back spot. And they are looking to their outside linebackers. Opposite Jerry Hughes, I mean, we know all the injuries they've had, and it looks like an ex-Washington player, Lorenzo Alexander, will start opposite Jerry Hughes. Now, we loved Lorenzo Alexander at Washington. He was a Washington guy, and he played for us for so many years. Great special teamer, but was never really a starter as an outside linebacker. He's getting on in age, and they will be needing one of the Lawsons, if not both of the Lawsons, to return as soon as possible, because I'm not sure poor old Lorenzo's going to hold up there starting at outside linebacker. But fingers crossed for the guy. And Robert is very concerned that Buffalo are just a penalty machine. They keep giving up penalties, and that's got to be something to look out for on Friday night, to just stop giving up stupid penalties. And as a Washington fan, I know all about that.
Well, but Robert seems to misunderstand whom his head coach and defensive coordinators are. The Ryan brothers. Can the Bills show more discipline? The answer is no. I don't know why you think that that's going to happen, but I mean, oh boy.
That's a fair comment, yeah.
Well, in any case, the answer is no. There will be no more discipline out of Buffalo. Excellent job, Neil. Excellent job. Cleveland is at Tampa Bay. I'm always interested in knowing more about what's going on with Cleveland. James, what do we got?
Well, great write-up by our Browns super fan. You can see the rest of it on our Facebook page. I'll hit some of the highlights. He's very excited to have all of their quote-unquote, and that's not my quote-unquote, that's his weapons on offense. RG3 will be throwing to Gary Barnage, Corey Coleman, Terrell Pryor, and Josh Gordon. He'd like to see RG3 only play for the first quarter, then get a quarter in for McCown, and then the second half all for Kessler. So it doesn't sound like he has a lot of faith in either McCown or RG3 finishing the season and wants to get a couple snaps for Kessler, but that's just speculation here. He's very excited to have the return of Joe Hayden. He says it's going to be a difficult matchup for him, having to face the two tough physical wide receivers of Tampa Bay, and should be a great opportunity to see him return to form. So he would like to see the running game improve. They've been putrid thus far on the ground. Center and right tackle need to play better, and he would definitely like to see this happen. For the rookie wide receivers, again, haven't seen much out of them, which is why he'd prefer to get them out on the field as much as possible, maybe even more than just the first half. For the run defense, he hopes that they have one this week. Ohio native Jamie Meter should be playing ahead of Shelton, who has been inconsistent to bad thus far this preseason. Tackling was a huge issue last week. I hope the coaches got so far got on the guys so that they can wear. We're going to restart that. I did not realize just how much profanity was in that sentence.
We gotta leave that in now.
Editing on the fly. So for the run defense, he's hoping that they actually have one this week. Ohio native Jamie Meter should be playing ahead of Shelton, and he's really hoping that the coaches got on their cases after the poor performances of the previous two preseason games. Tampa Bay, unfortunately, was one of our missing superfan previews. So like last week with the Detroit Lions, I'm just going to make some stuff up for Tampa Bay. I hear they're going to trade up and get a new kicker, possibly Sebastian Janikowski, after their current kicker is not doing so well. Hopefully he can make more than 50% of his kicks this week. That would be a step in the right direction. I would like to see the battle for backup quarterback, because you know with Jameis's running style, he's going to be prone to injury, and I frankly could not tell you who the backup in Tampa Bay is right now. Mike Evans, Austin Seferian Jenkins, and Vincent Jackson, they're going to be on a lot of people's fantasy radar, even though they are often being overlooked so far. And, you know, Frank Grimes. We got to make a mention of him as the token defensive starter that I know for Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see how Doug Martin plays this year for Tampa Bay. I think he had a couple of rough seasons where he wasn't doing much. Then all of a sudden, whoa! In a contract year, he turns out one of the greatest seasons of any recent running back. Interesting to see now he's being paid. What happens to him?
James, did we get a Tampa Bay write-up this week?
No, we did not.
Oh, so that was very good out of you, James. But James, you're the Texans super fan, so I'm making it official, ladies and gentlemen. We could use a Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan. If you're interested in the position, please email us nextfanup@gmail.com as we seem to have lost our Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan. Because he should feel lots of shame for sending us zero write-ups so far this preseason. Tampa Bay fans, we want to hear from you. Otherwise, I'll go get my 12-year-old son and we'll do the whole Bleacher Report for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers from this point forward.
We should check with Ron. I believe on the podcast last week, we asked him to reach out to Meeko Grimes.
That's right. That's right. One super fan that we do have is our Pittsburgh Steelers super fan, and that's you, Greg, and your team is visiting the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, and it's pretty exciting. Because of the floods in Louisiana, all the proceeds of this game are going to the flood victims. So that's a good move by Mr. Hall of Fame fail Benson down there. So that's pretty good. I like that. We'll start with the Saints, since that's not me. Chris, our Saints super fan, he's really looking forward to his team just playing tougher, which is kind of interesting. Last week, he felt that Houston really wiped the floor with them physically. And he's hoping that the team shows up better this week and actually shows some fight in their dress rehearsal here. He has a couple players to watch here. And he does have three on his write-up, but I'm only going to mention two. Pete, the offensive lineman, is really struggling so far. He's even gone as far as he used the word garbage in his write-up. He's going to get a look at guard this week, and it might be a make-it-or-break-it situation for him on the roster. And then Maybrayer, who is an interior defensive lineman, has to step up now that Rankins has gone down, and this team is really going to be desperate for interior pressure. So he'll be watching those two players in particular. Now switching to the good side, the Steelers, they're going to play all their offensive starters, everyone who isn't dinged up at all. So that means AB, Le'Veon, and Ben are all going to play. I wish they wouldn't do this. I'm just going to be closing my eyes and hoping that no one gets hurt. The one matchup I will be watching for is we have the second round draft pick who's a corner / safety. He's going to be our starting slot corner, Sean Davis. And I'm really interested to see, the job's practically been handed to him because of injury. So I want to see him face up against all the different options that the Saints have. It's kind of interesting because if Fleener does play, he offers one type of matchup. Then Brandon Cooks is like a poor man's Antonio Bryant, so that's a different type of matchup there. And they also have this rookie out of Ohio State, Michael Thomas, that I'm really interested in. He's more of a rangy, Colston-type player. So I'll just be interested. That's like the three different types of slot receivers that Davis could face during the regular season, and he's going to get them all in one game, hopefully. So that's what I'll be watching for. Other than that, we're just going to be praying no one gets hurt.
It's what we're all praying for. It's what we're all praying for. Moving on now to the final game on Friday. It is the Green Bay Packers at the San Francisco 49ers. Neil, this one's yours.
Yeah, terrific. From the two guys, Charlie and Brian, for the 49ers in Green Bay. Brian's looking for Corey Lindsley, the center. Now, Brian's obviously a diehard fan there. He's really into it. If he's going to be spending his time focusing on the center position, he's going to be watching to see how Corey Lindsley does. He's going to be taken over from J.C. Tretter at the center position. And it's an interesting one. Lindsley played all over the line for them last year, covering a lot of various injuries, especially at the right tackle. And I think he played really well against Washington in the playoffs. So be interesting to see how he plays, if he can really stick to center and make that his own. They've been very impressed so far up in Green Bay with their running game. We've all heard of Lacey and his weight loss, and they'll be looking for him. And James Starks is the other guy running back there. They'll be looking for a strong running game, which will take the pressure a little bit off Aaron Rodgers. My question would be for the Green Bay Nation would be, is Jordy Nelson going to play? And if he's not going to play, when is he going to play? He has been taking some snaps this past week, and they'll be hoping that he can get just some play in the game to get himself into some sort of shape. We saw last year how the passing game really struggled when Nelson and his excellent route running and his timing with Rodgers was lost. The other position of concern, the position of concern for Brian is the inside linebacker position. Obviously, we all know they've moved Clay Matthews out to outside linebacker, and they've got Martinez, Barrington, Thomas, and Bradford, who, no, not a law firm. They are the four options at inside linebacker, and I'm really hoping that Barrington gets it, because he has a good British name. So go, Barrington. And I think there are a lot of people out there who are really disappointed not to have seen Hundley play at quarterback this preseason. Brian's one of them. And as much as he's not enjoyed watching the other Green Bay backups, he'd rather see them for one more week than Aaron Rodgers playing in preseason. So with Hundley out again, it probably will be the backups. So maybe Hundley will get a run out next week if he's back from injury. In terms of San Francisco, Charlie just put up a fantastic, he could probably have given you a 20-minute speech on San Francisco and their various battles. I'll just give you a couple of them. Charlie is concerned that, as this is dress rehearsal week, San Francisco still doesn't have their leading man in place. And he, of course, is referring to Colin Kaepernick, who still has his sore shoulder. Apparently, he will play after a week of practice where he has been throwing the ball with decent velocity. So we'll see if he can do anything to push out Blaine Gabbert from the starting role. Although Gabbert has been efficient, but unspectacular. My concern with San Francisco, are they doing an RG3 with Kaepernick and just not playing him and keeping him out and for all sorts of reasons and just not play him this year and cut him at the end of the year? I'm not quite sure what's going on there. There's something, it just seems a wee bitty strange what's happening with Kaepernick this offseason. I mean, who gets such an arm that they can't throw the ball for such a long time after their surgery? Yeah, and anyway, it's a bit weird. The offensive line looks like a real strength. They're very happy with a first-round pick, Garnett, the guy they traded up for. He's playing left guard. Anthony Davis has moved into right guard because we have a seventh rounder. And isn't it great to see a seventh rounder? And I think he's called Trenton Brown. Yes, Trenton Brown is coming in at right tackle. And I'm always happy to see one of these seventh round picks. We always kind of think, seventh rounder, just pick a guy. But this guy's come through and is starting. Good for him. And really, the rest of them, you can read on Facebook. The defense, there have got lots of concerns defensively, especially with Arik Armstead's injury and when he's going to be back. Charlie's a bit worried that this could be a long-term injury in the 49ers. I'm just not saying so. So we'll see. And I've got to mention the guy who's going to be battling for the inside linebacker spot. He's called Ray Ray Armstrong. He must be so good, his parents named him twice.
Well done. Moving on to the Saturday games, we've got the Kansas City Chiefs at the Chicago Bears, and that is you, James.
Yes, and before I get into the write-ups from Nick and Tom, I would just like to point out the amazing opportunity that the NFL missed out on marketing. You've got Chicago and Kansas City about equidistant from the city of St. Louis. Why did they not play this in the Edward Jones Dome, and whichever team won, they would elect to either keep the St. Louis Rams fans or defer them to the other team? I really see a poor marketing strategy here.
Brilliant.
But over to what Nick has to say. The battle over the second cornerback and slot cornerback positions will continue to be interesting and is something to keep an eye on. The Chiefs' young defensive backs generated a lot of bad tape last week after getting a lot of time with the ones in a trial by fire in Los Angeles last week. Given Los Angeles's wide receiving core, having your cornerbacks not put up a good performance is a very big indictment on their talent. This week, they'll be facing Chicago's much more talented passing attack, and it'll be interesting to see if they can bounce back. Steven Nelson still seems like a favorite to get the second cornerback job, but rookie DJ White started in L.A., and he could get back in the mix with a strong outing. Also, the wide receiver Chris Conley made a strong case for the wide receiver 2 job. Also, I was unaware that Kansas City had a second wide receiver last week while in Los Angeles. He had 3 catches, which is probably more than the second wide receiver had all of last year. He had a great 37-yard sideline grab, 66 total yards for those 3 catches, and he'd expect the Chiefs to give him more opportunities to shine this week against the Bears' weak defensive backfield. He has a couple more great points that you can find on our Facebook page. As for Tom, the Bears' offense looked better against the Patriots last week after some considerable problems protecting the quarterback the week before against Denver. Denver threw some blitzes and stunts at the Bears that they weren't prepared for, whereas the Bears had more success against the New England team that played it considerably more vanilla. With limited game planning for this week's game, he expects Kansas City defense to do more to generate pressure and play it closer to the way the Broncos did. It'll be interesting to see how much the line has gelled in the last 2 weeks. Then Tom brings up the Kansas City starters took it to the Rams and their vaunted front seven on Saturday night on their first drive. And though they struggled a bit more after that, they still managed to produce 17 points under quarterback Alex Smith before they turned the ball over to backup Nick Foles. The Kansas City offensive line could provide an interesting test for the Bears front seven, which the team believes has been believed to have improved greatly. So,
excellent. Next up on the schedule, it's the Detroit Lions at the Baltimore Ravens, Greg.
And we got a great write-up here from Dawn, Big Dawn, our Ravens super fan. This is the week that they're expecting Joe Flacco to make his return, and that's a big news because Joe Flacco is recovering from that ACL injury. So it'll be interesting to see him move around and whatnot, maybe not how he performs. In other news, Suggs and Dumervale are off the pup list, but he doesn't expect them to play. So there's going to be extra reps for their backup outside linebackers. So this could be huge because of the age of Suggs and Dumervale. These guys could play a lot of snaps for them in the upcoming year, so that'll be very interesting to watch. For the Lions, for the third week in a row, we have shame to be cast there. We did not get a write-up, but since I've seen the Lions once this year, I've been able to make a couple of my own inferences here. I think the Lions' offensive line, even though they haven't lost a starter yet, their depth has been tested. So it'll be interesting to see how they adjust with the second-team offensive line, maybe for the future of the season, just to see how those guys are playing. Then the other thing that they've showcased this week is that they're going to start doing more no-huddle, up-tempo stuff. So far that even the Golden Tate has been quoted that he thinks that the up-tempo attack will make them an elite offense this season. So that'll be interesting to see if they try any of that.
In other headlines, offensive wide receiver thinks running more offensive plays leads to more offense.
And bigger contracts, I'm sure. So, but this is my little nugget for Neil, because apparently his line on either side needs more depth. The Lions apparently think they have extreme depth at the defensive tackle. So another conditional draft pick is probably heading from Washington to Detroit.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I think if we don't have a report from the Detroit guy, then all we need to do really is preface anything with a reference to Justin's bromance in Jim Bob.
It's true. It's true.
It's hard to type with a paper bag on your head, guys.
I will be talking with Will later on this week, so hopefully we can get Will back into shape here as the Detroit Lions super fan. Speaking of turnover in the super fan positions, the Philadelphia Eagles been having trouble getting James involved here. They are at the Indianapolis Colts, but I know our Colts super fan is active. Neil, what do we got on this one?
Well, yeah, we have got a Colts super fan, and he is quite rightly, I think, excited by what he saw from Andrew Luck last week. He looked injury free. He looked like he was making all the throws, and hopefully this week he'll have T.Y. Hilton alongside him to just test out that deep ball, and see Indianapolis' offense getting back into shape. That would be a huge boost for them, and we might even put them into being what, favorites in the division if Luck is back 100% and playing well. But we'll see. He's looking forward to seeing a little bit more from that this week. Like I mentioned earlier, we've got another running game problem here. The Colts just can't appear to generate any running game at all, and they'll be looking to just try anything new in this game to try and sum it up, some even just tiny amount of running game to balance off the... obviously, they're going to be a real passing team with Andrew Luck. Their offensive line has looked better, I believe, in preseason. They've got their center that I wanted at Washington, Ryan Kelly, playing well. And you wonder if Ryan Kelly's and Andrew Luck are going to be the Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday for the next 10 years for them. And in this week, I believe they signed a family man, Antonio Cromartie. And he's in there to replace Vontae Davis, or at least cover for him. Davis, who I think most would agree is their best defensive player. he's going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks. And Cromartie will hopefully come in and give him a bit of depth there. But I think you're reading a lot of stuff right across the NFL media saying that this Indianapolis defense could be a real liability. There could be a lot of shootouts in Indianapolis this year. In terms of Philadelphia, I have done a little bit of research into Philadelphia today, and I've got to say it, as a Washington fan, it's left me feeling rather dirty. But what I can tell you is that their offense is not yet scoring points, putting points on the board. No touchdown drives for their first-team offense so far in preseason. And even though they've had really good field position with Landry Jones giving the ball to them on multiple occasions last week, Bradford still hasn't had a TD drive, and he's looked a bit rusty, and they just need to get something cracking there. And one of the problems they have on offense is their wide receivers. They are just terrible. with Matthews having his injury, they've really got to try and put something together because it's looking pretty rough. And the defense, they think the defense is legit. They've had 9 turnovers in this preseason, so some positive news there for them on the defensive side of the ball. But I think with Philadelphia, as a Washington fan, I look across there and I see an offensive line which is in a bit of disarray. They've got an untried and tested rookie at left guard. They've got Lane Johnson having, I'm going to say, 10-game suspension, certainly a lengthy suspension coming up at right tackle. Peters at left tackle has had a few injuries over the last few years. It's looking a bit of a mess there, and it's not what you need when you've got Sam Bradford back there. Wentz, I don't think Wentz will play again this week. He's still having some issues with his ribs, quite rightly. Must be a painful one trying to throw the ball. And that's really the Philadelphia Eagles and Indianapolis Colts. Not to be missed, Jay.
No, not to be missed at all. We've reached the Battle of New York in our Week 3 previews. It's the New York Giants at the New York Jets. We are joined now by our Giants superfan, Sam. Hi, Sam. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going?
So glad to have you. We're going to get into a couple of the reasons why we asked you to join the show today, but give us sort of a quick preview of what we can expect to see or what we should be watching for this week with the Giants.
The first and most important thing for any Giants fan to be watching this week is the offensive line. And, you know, playing the Jets every year is good because their defensive linemen are great. So, you know, it's a real test for our run game and our pass blocking to see what we can do because, you know, we have the weapons between Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard and Eli. With given time, with a good line, it's an offense that, you know, is going to finish near the top of the league. So it really just depends if that line can hold up. And, you know, it's always good to have a really good test in the preseason, and that's what the Jets give us on defense. On the other side of the ball, you know, it kind of gives us a chance to test our secondary, the newly rebuilt secondary and pass rush. Against, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brandon Marshall, Eric Deckers, it's a decent receiving core. So, you know, it's a good test on both sides of the ball to really test what the Giants are going to need to do well to be successful this upcoming season.
I'll mention Andrew, our Jets super fans, watching Geno and Petty. Will Bryce show enough to show the Jets he can be the backup, which is interesting. Brent Cavill versus Ben a Jelana. Neil, well, I've taken over your job with the tough name.
Great job there. Great job there, Jay. Keep going.
With Bruno Giacomoni hurt, and I'm just gonna slay these names now on purpose. So sorry to all of those families. Ineffective and expensive, one of the two unheralded young guys could be the opening day right tackle. Oh, that's going to make everyone feel really good. Cavale or Ajelana. And then he's watching Jalen Marshall versus Sherrone Peak versus Robbie Anderson. Those are young wide receivers. So he's looking at depth there. And of course, who's going to fill the second cornerback slot? Will it be Marcus Williams, Buster Screen, or D. Milner? That is an interesting battle there. One that we probably should talk with Andrew a little bit more about. But Sam, since we have you on the phone, let's talk a little bit more about your Giants. And one of the things you had mentioned in our Slack group is you're sick and tired of hearing about Victor Cruz. Tell me a little bit more about this. Because from the outside looking in, I would think Victor Cruz is a huge X factor for the Giants.
I'm just over, and I'm sure a lot of super fans can agree, is the lazy sports writing that happens these days when sports writers who are looking to write columns decide to write columns about X factors and choose the biggest star on the team as the X factor. And in New York, you're seeing a lot of that with Victor Cruz. And to me, he's at best, his best case scenario is probably the third wide receiver playing, 40% of the time. And even if he, it's a bad injury he suffered, he's been injured for a while. So, he's really going to need to take a step up. And I don't think that's going to be the driver of the Giants' success this season. I think it's, a little bit facetious to think that Victor Cruz is going to be our savior when there's clearly so many better players on either side of the ball to focus on. And, Seahawks fans are probably seeing it too, because every time I see a Seahawks article, Jimmy Graham is the X factor. I mean, what all pro tight end in his prime, physical prime, is not an X factor. Neil, the Redskins, I'm sure it's Kirk Cousins as the X factor because he's the starting quarterback. And, when you look around the league, you just want to understand more about teams. And with all the sports writers writing the same exact article about the same four or five X factors, it kind of grinded my gears a little bit. And I let everybody know.
See, and again, from the outside looking into the fan base, I would say, Victor Cruz is an absolute X factor. If he, most people, I think, have him written off at this point, that he's not going to return to that form that he had a couple of years ago. But if he does, that is a huge advantage that the Giants would then hold in terms of the wide receiving corps. So who is an X factor that we should be paying more attention to?
I got to go with the rookie free safety, Darian Thompson. He's looked really impressive in the preseason, and especially in training camps. There's only been rave reviews. He's kind of that, center field type who can play deep and really cover a lot of ground. And what he does on the defense is he really unlocks that defense, because now if he's able to play center field, Landon Collins, the strong safety who, likes to come down into the box and hit people, he's now more free to do that. And then it allows you to play another defensive back there, which kind of, helps how much you can cover and doesn't really take away from your run game. So he's really like a huge key for the season, because if he can deliver, then that defense becomes a lot more flexible and a lot more dynamic.
This is fantastic. Neil, talk to me a little bit about the true X factor sort of here. I mean, I would imagine you too, looking on the outside in, would think Victor Cruz would fit that bill.
I'm a bit like the majority you were talking about a moment ago, Jay. I'm not sure. I mean, if Victor Cruz comes back, great, but is he going to come back the same player? He was a player who relied so much on that phenomenal quickness burst, and I wonder if he can ever get that back. I hope he does, but I'm doubtful. The other question I would have for Sam there would be about if Cruz does come back, is he just taking up space that would otherwise be filled by Odell Beckham? I wonder if that's really the sort of second receiver you want there at the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about Victor Cruz taking any of Odell's time or space on the field. I don't think even Coach Bob McAdoo, who has been uncreative as possible this preseason, is going to do that. Odell Beckham's a receiver that can play downfield, across the field, middle of the field, anywhere on the field. So, I think as long as you just put skilled players around him, he'll find his way to contribute and contribute at a high level. And it's not that I don't think Victor Cruz is great, and it's not I don't want him to succeed. It's just, it's too easy to write the articles and the analysis that if the injured former star comes back and it's just the same self, he's an X factor. It's great to have Victor Cruz as a third wide receiver, but what are the chances of that happening and how much is that really going to help? Not as much as the other players. So as I want to see him succeed, I just don't want to read about it for three more weeks.
Sure, lazy journalism is one of the worst things we get in all sports. Yeah. It's just bloody annoying. What about Sterling Shepard?
And it's just like when you see an article of the 32 teams and 23 of the X factors are in the top five players of that team, it kind of just gets, there's just no reason to read articles. So, it comes from from a mindset of catering to the fan who only recognizes three or four people's names per team, and they get that reader. But from sites you'd expect more of, you know, I don't want to see Victor Cruz or Jimmy Graham as X Factors or Blake Bortles. These are guys that we all know if they play really well, their teams are going to be better for it. So, you know, let's try opening the minds of a casual fan that wants a deeper analysis.
Well, as long as I don't see an article that says Tom Brady is an X Factor, then we're all good.
The Patriots X Factor was somebody on the defensive line. I think that may have been the good one. I'm not sure. There were a few that people write about that are good, but the overwhelming majority is just regurgitated crap.
The other thing that goes along with those articles, if they choose a sort of a player that's not really known, they say, this guy could be great. But on the other hand, it wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't.
Oh, that's another favorite lazy journalism type terrible cliche.
So who exactly is the old man on this podcast? I mean, Sam, I don't think you're old enough to be this melancholy about articles. I mean, kind of crazy. You'd be a little bit harsh here.
Fine. You know, if I log on to, are we allowed to talk about companies on this podcast, or should we not do that? Because I have, like, when you log on to the large media outlets and, you know, they're meant to cater to a more basic fan, no offense to anybody, I'd expect to see these articles. When you go to the nicher sites, the sites that claim to not just be clickbait and claim to offer real analysis, and you see these names, that's when it really bothers me. You know, I'm not logging on to NFL.com and on the front page and the top headline looking for deep analysis, but, you know, when you go to smaller sites that are supposed to be, you know, havens of journalism, and you see this, it's disappointing.
I don't know if any of the smaller sites can claim that they're havens of journalism, but I get what you're saying. James, you've been unmuted for a little bit. Did you have something here for Sam?
Oh, nothing specific for Sam. Just there's a lot of similar articles out there. I know today one was released on the non-quarterback MVP of each team, which was trying to highlight, you know, teams like the Patriots that, you know, the de facto MVP is going to be the quarterback, or like the Seahawks, which, yeah, that's fine for a third of the league that has like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, etc. Then you get to the teams like, you know, Houston, and J.J. Watt is still the MVP of the Texans, which, or the non-quarterback MVP of the Texans, which, you know, it's like you can spend some time on the articles for the third of the league that already has a quarterback MVP, but the other two-thirds is just regurgitated from either these X-Factor articles or, you know, key contributor articles.
Yeah, and I think the X-Factor for the Texans in the article I was talking about earlier was Brock Osweiler, which I'm sure is a surprise to everybody listening that a starting quarterback for the Texans is going to make a huge difference this season.
that may have just been copy and pasted.
That was both sarcastic and legitimate at the same time.
Excellent. Well, the X Factor for everyone out there is the next Fan Up podcast. So we hope that we're delivering the sort of stuff that you should be watching, that you should be listening to. And we hope to do that for you all season long. Sam, thank you very much for sharing your opinions here, because I'll no longer look at Victor Cruz as the X factor for the Giants.
Yeah, well, hopefully he is. So there's that. All right, have a great day, guys. I'll speak to you.
All right, so there goes Sam. Now we bring in the Tennessee Titans at the Oakland Raiders preview. This one is yours, James. Before we jump into the preview, the Raiders have apparently looked to trademark the Las Vegas Raiders. We know there's a lot of rumblings still that Oakland could be looking to move, and Las Vegas is one of those destinations.
Yeah, they've also released a couple of proposals for how much the city of Las Vegas and the state of Nevada would have to pay. Meanwhile, you know, billionaire developer Sheldon Adelson, casino magnate, is trying to play the Stan Kroenke role of poor man who can't possibly afford another building. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I know it's a very toxic relationship right now between California and both the Raiders and the Chargers over stadium deals. But with that, Monty, as always, has brought up some great keys to the game. He says that they play the Titans in week three of the regular season. So not only is this a preview, but this is just a glorified practice, which if this is a glorified practice, I guess week three of the regular season is just going to be a super glorified practice because he's playing against the Titans. It's going to be the first home preseason game. Hopefully ACDC can get into sync. Otherwise, he's calling for them to start rooming together again like they did in training camp. Interesting strategy to get a little closer. We know it worked out with, I think it was Jeff Saturday and Peyton Manning way back in the day. And he wants to see the starting O-line completely dominate and live up to the billing as the ability to challenge Dallas for the top O-line in all of football. That and more can be found on our Facebook page for Oakland. For Tennessee, the Titans fan is now 0-3 on preseason write-ups.
Another one of our newer fans.
Yeah, this works out pretty well for me, though. He's a division rival. I can't honestly blame him for not wanting to follow this team. After trading Doriel Green Beckham, I guess what you're sort of concerned with is who Marcus Mariota is going to throw the ball to. There's a lot of hype on Tajae Sharp. They also went out and got Rishard Matthews from the Dolphins this past offseason. And of course, they have DeMarco Murray as well as their recent draft pick of Derrick Henry. That's all well and good. You know, their offense will probably be better than last year, strictly from the standpoint that it can't really be worse. Paul Kaharsky, who is the blogger for, or I guess the guy who covers the AFC South and specifically the Tennessee Titans, must not be watching the same AFC South or is in some sort of bizarre. Maybe he got like the new Madden game early and played out the AFC South because he's thinking the Titans are going to be maybe not competing for the top of the division, but it's too early to write them off as an automatic bottom of the division or even bottom of the NFL team. I'm not entirely sure what he's seeing there. I guess he sees the improved offense and just assumes that's all going to gel. I'm a lot less optimistic on Tennessee's chances, if my sarcasm hasn't come through quite enough as well. I just don't know if they've possibly done enough on defense. And, you know, their offensive line, you know, they got the former Houston center, Ben Jones, which is obviously going to help them. But, you know, their offensive line is still paper thin, so it's a good thing they don't play in a division that's known for, you know, big defensive ends in Jacksonville or Houston, or, you know, high scoring offenses in Indianapolis, which will make them go 0-6 in the division. But you know, go ahead, email in and send in some facts on why you should be the Tennessee super fan and why I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at Tennessee's schedule here. Like Minnesota, I know I hate Minnesota, but I don't hate Minnesota enough to say they could lose to the Titans. Detroit, I mean, maybe, possibly, but I doubt it. Oakland, they're not beating Oakland. Texans, I don't think they're beating your team there, James. The Dolphins, it's a possibility, but I mean, I don't know. I think I'd give the Dolphins the edge there. The Browns, they could beat the Browns. I think that's pretty much their only guaranteed victory there is Cleveland. But
I think guarantee is a strong word.
You're right. That is a strong word, but I'm a man that likes to make strong predictions, and so I'll stand by it. They will only beat the Cleveland Browns within their first six games. Was that how many I went through? I'm lying. I'm not standing by that at all. All right. Let's move on because we are definitely getting long here, gentlemen. We have the Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis at the Denver Broncos. I think the biggest question on everyone's mind, Greg, Trevor Siemian is the guy that's starting, not butt fumble himself, Mark Sanchez.
Yeah, I think Mr. Butt Fumble has played himself off the roster there. I can't see them paying him $4.5 million. So that'll be interesting. Trevor, I believe, is a late-round quarterback or undrafted free agent from a year or two ago. He's developing pretty nicely. We're going to see if he can up his game a little bit here against a decent Rams defense. So it'll be a good dress rehearsal and maybe a swan song for the butt fumble. Lewis, our Broncos fan, is also going to be interested in the defensive line because they apparently just lost Vance Walker, who's a big defensive end. I think he's one of these 3-4 defensive ends. And he's concerned that even against the meager Rams offensive line, that his defensive line might not be able to create penetration without him. So that'll be an area of focus to watch for. On the Rams side, which is maybe a little bit more interesting because they have a lot more jobs that are up in the air, it's all about the quarterbacks from what Jared says. Case Keenum is showing that he is the starter and that experience does count for something. I don't think it's too far of a stretch to say that Jared Goff looks the worst of the first three, the quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round, which there were three of them. That's a little concerning. So we'll see if Keenum can lead this team to bump the 7-9 mark, but that's pretty tall order in my opinion. The other really interesting part of his write-up, it talks about Malcolm Brown, who was a big-time recruit when he was at Texas. He was an undrafted or seventh-round draft pick last year behind Todd Gurley in the running back situation. Apparently, he's looking fantastic. And if anything would happen to Gurley, he'd apparently be the number two back. So he's a guy to watch for. He's probably going to light it up, you know, in the second quarter on in this game. So it'll be very interesting to watch him play. That's pretty much what they're looking for. It's all about the quarterbacks, and maybe we're going to get to see both the first-round quarterbacks go head-to-head, and maybe we'll see who is developing better.
I suspect we're going to see more Goff than we will of Lynch, but all right, never know. It is now time for the final three games to preview. These are the games that will be on Sunday. We begin with San Diego at Minnesota. I hate the Minnesota Vikings. But there's been lots of news, Neil, before we jump into this game with San Diego. And the Joey Bosa holdout continues and has really taken an interesting turn here. Apparently the Chargers have taken off their best available offer at this point. Joey Bosa is leaning towards sitting out for the entire season. But ultimately, I don't see where this is benefiting either side. I get where Joey Bosa is coming from. He made a stand. He's made his point. But he is a rookie, and ultimately, he needs to get out on that field and play and prove himself. For the Chargers, I don't get what they think they're getting out of this at all. It doesn't seem to make any sense whatsoever. And so I asked Ken his thoughts on what's going on here. The Bosa thing is absolutely crazy. This is what Ken writes. Every time I think about it, I'm furious. I'm furious at both sides. On the one hand, the Chargers are embarrassing themselves by not offering literally what every other third pick in the draft usually gets offered. That's an important point. They're not arguing about the money involved for this particular contract. They're arguing about when that money is going to get paid. So that's a very interesting point. On the Bosa side, if he sits out and has to get redrafted, he's losing millions of dollars. And I think here the thinking is that he's not going to be the third pick in next year's draft, or better than the third pick in next year's draft either. So he's going to lose money just based on the guaranteed scale. Now, the other thing about this, as was mentioned earlier by James, is the Chargers are trying to get a stadium and they need public funds to get it done, which is near impossible to do in the state of California. So Ken writes, in terms of the stadium, I used to think the situation was doomed, but I've completely switched sides. I'm optimistic that they'll stay. The reasoning behind the optimism is because the funding for the stadium doesn't take money from the city of San Diego. They've set it up so that the tax money is going to fall on the burden of the hotels and the revenue generated from tourists. Lots of big names in San Diego are standing up and publicly supporting a new stadium, and the feeling around town is that losing the Chargers would be a terrible thing for our city at large. Hosting the MLB All-Star Game this year is a great example of the added value a professional sports team adds to this place. So I do find all of this absolutely fascinating and something that I will be watching very closely. Did I hear somebody had something they wanted to add here?
Yeah, I've got two quick things. One is everybody, a lot of the stadium deals are financed, whether it be through rental car or hotels or increased sales tax on a particular thing, and they sell it as, oh, it's not going to affect you, the average taxpaying citizen of San Diego. All those numbers are based on projections, and the projections are that, oh, well, with this NFL's team coming in 8 weeks per year, we're going to have hotel capacity go from 60% on those particular weekends up to 90 or 100% those particular weekends. It's going to generate this much revenue over time. The hotels are going to increase their prices. And so it's just a big projection in the future. And when that money doesn't come, which it did not come in St. Louis, they were actually facing a stadium underfund where the state had to step in and just do basic maintenance on the Edward Jones Dome. That doesn't come in. It comes out of the state's general fund. And when money comes out of the general fund, other things have to be cut. You'll see your school quality go down, which is usually the one that everybody has to clip box tops off of cereal boxes to fund education. Why don't we do, box tops for NFL billionaires? That's a good strategy to have. But I've railed on that before. We've railed on that before. The Joey Bosa thing, as far as the contract goes, they're set into a slotted value. His total value for his contract is going to be just under $26 million. As you've mentioned, it's about when he gets the money. They've offered to pay more of his signing bonus up front than any pick other than Jared Goff, which is that's a step in the right direction. The big thing that Bosa doesn't agree to is offset language, which basically means if, the Chargers cut him after year four, or I'm sorry, prior to year four, where he's due $8 million in year four, and he goes and signs with, say, the Cleveland Browns, and the Browns want to pay him, $5 million that year. He won't get the $8 million in addition to the $5 million. He would just get the $8 million, and then the Browns would effectively be paying the Chargers the $5 million for that. So Bosa is taking a very weird strategy in my mind of, not only do I think I'm not going to live up to this contract, I'm going to do so poor. I want some insurance clause that if I do so poorly that they're going to cut me and take a huge cap hit, but I play just good enough that some other team is going to pay me millions of dollars. I want to collect both from the Chargers who cut me and the new team that signs me. So I think both of them are being rather foolish in this endeavor.
I think that goes beyond saying the foolishness that this holdout has been, and what the CBA and the rookie salary cap was supposed to prevent in the first place. So, to me, I don't get it from either side. But ultimately, one of those sides has got to cave, and we know it's not the owners that usually have to do that. It's always got to be the player. So if the player wants to play, which I believe he does. I mean, as mentioned, sitting out a year, it's not like you can go back to college and play another year. You're out of football for an entire year. To stay in shape and to make yourself relevant for next year's draft, near impossible. But anyway,
he will not make $5 million in the CFL, that's for sure.
And Neil, what do we have for a preview for this game?
Well, in terms of if I can just go back quickly, Jay, to the Bosa situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think James is spot on. Are we not talking here about basically 3 months? They've offered to pay 85% of his bonus by the end of the calendar year. So let's just assume that's the 31st of December. He would be due anyway to have the full bonus paid in March. So let's assume that's the last day of March. We're talking about 3 months here. This is ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. Bosa, I just don't see. He just doesn't have a leg to stand on. And if he did have a leg to stand on, he'd shoot himself in the foot. It's ridiculous. I mean, he's got to get himself in there. He's not going to start week one, no question about that. It's a complete waste of time for Bosa. He seems to have backed himself into a corner, and he just can't swallow his pride and come out and play. I don't see anything really wrong here on the Chargers side. It's really frustrating. Really frustrating. And I wonder how the veteran players on the team feel. Apart from the guy who's playing in his position right now, the rest of them probably are absolutely livid that he's not in there.
What about the fans there in San Diego too? I mean, they have to be just want to wash their hands with Bosa at this point in time. I mean, literally,
yep.
He's arguing about when his $20 million is going to be paid. Not if, but when. Yes. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's hard to sympathize with that. And I'm sure the San Diego fans, I'm sure both of them are very upset. In terms of the game, Jay, I have very little on San Diego, Minnesota, because there were no super fan previews. It's not easy, guys, when there's no previews. The one thing to say about San Diego is that they do have defensive line issues, obviously with Bosa not being there, which they had counted on him being there. They've got Sean Lissamore, who's out injured, and now they've got Damian Square, who is suspended for the first four games of the season, so looking a bit thin on that San Diego defensive line. And in terms of going across to the Minnesota Vikings, it's going to be a case of, is Teddy going to play or is Teddy not going to play? He appeared to he was pulled out, wasn't he, by the coach for reasons that we don't know why last week. So the thought is he's going to play this week, but we'll all be on tenterhooks waiting to see if he turns out on the field. And otherwise, I think the buzz in Minnesota, from what I can research quickly, was that Shamar Stephen, who was another seventh-round draft pick, he's a lot of buzz around him, and he's pushing to get a starting position on the defensive line, a defensive tackle. So good luck to him as well. Otherwise, I have nothing else in this game, so clearly this is going to be game of the week.
Well, it is going to be on Fox. It's interesting. Fox has got a doubleheader on Sunday, this game, and then the next game, which is yours, James, the Arizona Cardinals visiting your Houston Texans.
Yes, and Dr. Brian, our Cardinals fan, would like to point out that based on their first two games, they have not looked like a Super Bowl contender that a lot of people have projected them to be. However, for the first time all preseason, they have John Brown, Justin Bethel, Robert Kimdiche, Frosty Rucker, and the Honey Badger all on the practice field. It's unclear how many of them are going to actually be playing this week, but just having them back, you know, 2 weeks to go before the start of the regular season, things are definitely looking up in Arizona. DJ Humphreys has gotten killed by Khalil Mack, and now the combo of Watt and Clowney to deal with. Well, Watt won't be playing, but he'll have to face Clowney, which is so far been mostly a bust. Curious to see if he's going to be up to the test. A.Q. Shipley is a pile of garbage right now, masquerading as a competent NFL center. Seems like a lot of teams are having center problems this year. Most Cardinal fans are praying that rookie fourth-rounder Evan Bohm continues to show more improvement week over week. And then he's also concerned if Brandon Williams can hold off Justin Bethel for the number two cornerback job. Bethel, while earlier praised about getting him back, is now saying he's not a very good quarterback. But Williams might need more seasoning before he's thrown to the wolves. That comes up to the Texan side of things, where this morning we learned that center Nick Martin is going to go under the knife and have season-ending ankle surgery. So that's not great for our second-round pick. I looked up who is going to be starting in his place, and it looks like it's going to be a guy named... I thought I had it there. Looks like it's going to be a guy named Greg Mance, who ESPN has a picture of, but the Texans' own website does not have a picture of. That's never good. So, you know, the struggles of Brock Osweiler have been well documented. Now he gets to go back and forth between a veteran in Tony Bergstrom, who's turning 30, I believe, this year, and a rookie, Greg Mance, who up until now has had no reason to have a picture on the Texans' website. They've put a lot out there about how he's looking great and making the most of this opportunity. I think that's trying to spin the Martin injury into a slightly better light. Speaking of Brock, he needs to do better than just not turn the ball over and, you know, be a game manager. This week, his metric for success going against a very good defense will be avoiding three and outs and then not getting sacked. In addition to not having Nick Martin, we're not going to have guard Derek Newton or Dwayne Brown. Brown's going to be on the PUP list, and Newton is dealing with kind of a nagging injury, trying to get healthy for the the regular season. So expecting a lot of time either to pass or some help from the running game is probably not realistic for Brock. On defense, it will be our corner's first opportunity to have to cover true vertical threats. The secondary proved to be thin last year, which was disguised by a good defensive line. But it'll be good to see if they have, in the case of Jackson and Johnson, developed over last year. And with Jonathan Joseph, hopefully he hasn't fallen too far off the pace that he was setting last year. And as much as we make fun of it, this is our first mention of it this week. It was good to see competent special teams for a change last week. They will be important again this week because it just seems like it's going to be a battle for field position. Finally, I'm curious who's going to end up winning the number two wide receiver position between Braxton Miller and Will Fuller. I think this is a case of Will Fuller having a lot more expectations on him, you know, coming out of school, being a first round pick, and then Braxton Miller coming out of college, always being touted as a raw wide receiver. Both of them are playing, you know, about the same level. Will Fuller might actually be playing at a slightly higher level, but just since the expectations were so much different for these two players, it seems like everybody's kind of gravitating towards Braxton Miller as the clear-cut number two receiver.
Hey, James, follow-up there. What happened to Jalen Strong? Is he injured, or is he just not playing well enough to be considered for the number two?
He's still going to be considered. I don't know really what his problem is, if there's something else going on behind the scenes. He's not playing any worse than Miller or Will Fuller. It's just that they're just not putting him out there quite as often.
All right. Greg, you asked a question, and now you get the privilege of giving us the last preview. It's the Cincinnati Bengals at the Jacksonville Jaguars, another nationally televised game on NBC.
And two historic cellar dwellers, so this is worthy of being the last game, I guess. So,
I'm sure Simon will not appreciate that comment.
It was good-hearted, right? So it'll be fine, I'm sure. For Jacksonville, Ryan writes in that he'll be watching primarily the left tackle position as Jokel versus Beckham Part 3. Jokel, of course, is the high draft pick that cannot reach his potential, and Beecham is the former Steeler, seventh-round draft pick, who is constantly overachieving. He's an undersized guy. I expect, and so does Ryan, that Beecham will win the battle, but this is Jokel's last chance, and maybe his last chance for being on the roster. And the other big thing that Ryan's going to be looking forward to is we always hear about...
FYI, just to jump in there, I have a jersey waiting for Mr. Jokel. We clearly have a position of need as well, so just saying.
Well, good. I would love to see James Harrison blitz pass him, so that'd be great. Ryan's also going to be looking at his secondary, because apparently this is the first week that their high-profile starting secondary is going to be on the field together. The secondary that is going to finally include Ramsey, Jalen Ramsey, the high draft pick, and Gibson, the former, I believe, the Pro Bowl free safety from Cleveland a couple years ago. He was a big free agent signing. But it'll be the first time their projected starting secondary will be all out there together. So he'll be watching that just to see if there's any, you know, better production than last year. You know, that will actually complement all the high profile rush ends and whatnot they've brought in with Dante Fowler and the other guys around them, the big name Malik Jackson that they brought in also. For our Cincinnati preview, since they're in my division, I'm just going to wing it here. Future Hall of Famer Tyler Boyd, you know, he's a future Hall of Famer because he's born in Pennsylvania. But he's making plays all over the field, and I'm excited to watch him. So, then the other place of interest will be the tight end position. They have a Ryan Hewitt, who they were projecting to be the third tight end, and it looks like he's going to be opening the season as a starting tight end since Tyler Eifert just started jogging this week. So he's quite a few weeks off from being able to actually play because of the injury he suffered in the Pro Bowl. Yep, the Pro Bowl. And then their number two tight end, Tyler Kroft, they really like Tyler's there. He's also hurt, and he's projected to miss another 5 or 6 weeks. So Ryan Hewitt, their third-string tight end, will be starting week one, so he'll get a really good look this game. Also, another, the only final point I'd like to bring up is I'd love to see what this revamped Cincinnati secondary is going to look like going against the Allens, you know, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns. The secondary lost, I believe, one safety and a corner from last year's team, and they do have a lot of highly drafted guys to replace them, but it's, you know, they've also, they're highly drafted, but the reason they have so many of those guys is because they've also been a slight disappointment throughout their careers. So that'll be really interesting to watch.
All these games are going to be interesting to watch, especially if you're a diehard fan. And of course, if you listened to this show after the games were played, you can hear what we missed and what you'd like to miss. You can also become the Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan. But, and all you have to do is email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And honestly, any of the previews that we mentioned, and we didn't mention a super fan write-up for, those jobs are always available. So send us those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. And you too could perhaps, you know, not do a super fan preview. Tweet us at NFU podcast, and of course those super fan previews will be available as many as we can at facebook.com/NFU podcast. We love hearing from you, and we want to hear from you more, especially as the regular season approaches. We'll have a recap show on Sundays, which should be available to you late Sunday night, early Monday morning. I will bring another interview show for you next Wednesday and every Wednesday through the regular season. I'm working on a guest as we speak. And, of course, we'll be back again on Thursday for the preview show. Next week's preview going into week four, which we all know is the irrelevant week of the preseason, will be a lot less about previewing the games as much as talking about that one guy, those last roster spots that we're hoping to see filled. That is the week where the super fans will really come in handy, because those are pretty much the only guys that will know who those deep, deep roster guys are going to be. So we'll be back again next Thursday with those deep roster predictions for you on the Next Fan Up podcast. We went really long today, guys, so we hope you really enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you again Sunday evening. Here's Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.